one.
Let's go. Let's go.
You're about to experience action like you've never heard it before. Action sports, celebrities, badasses, and massive interviews. All coming to you from the Polaris Razor Studio. This is Jim Beaver's Project Action, exclusively on Podcast One.
The biggest names, biggest teams, and biggest moments are happening all month long in October. The World Series is now here, along with all the incredible NFL and college football games. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts and the exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet. Use promo code PODCAST1 and get a 50% sign-up bonus. BetOnline.ag. Welcome to this week's edition of Project Action on Podcast One, coming at you from the Polaris Razor Studio. Jim Beaver here, just like I have been, locked and loaded for 100-plus episodes of this little podcast that keeps on cranking its way up the charts, all due to your support. Thank you to everyone who has tuned in, who has subscribed over there on iTunes, has left a rating or a review. Much appreciated. Don't forget, as always, you leave a rating or review, leave your Twitter, Instagram, at username in the body of the review, and I will follow you back on social media. So thank you guys that have continued to do that, continue to help us grow this thing. Got a couple of amazing guests today. That's right. I said a couple of them. We've got Dave Mason with BetOnline.ag. You heard him, or you heard that intro. Yes, they have one of the biggest, baddest betting sites on the internet. And right now it is crazy over there. We've got MMA, we've got NBA, NHL, NFL, Major League Baseball playoffs, a ton of stuff going on, so we get the lowdown with Mr. Dave Mason. And then right after that, this is one I've been teasing for weeks now. Finally, you guys get to listen to it. It's an over an hour long with one of the greatest Hollywood stuntmen of all time, Mr. Eddie Braun. Just had a movie come out about him called Stuntman. It's about his career, and it also, you know, kind of chronicalizes, I don't know, is that even a word? Documents, let's say documents, right? That's the word right there I'm looking for. Documents, his quest to go over the Snake River Canyon in Evel Knievel's rocket. That is right. That guy right there, Mr. Eddie Braun, is the one who was crazy enough to reenact Evel Knievel's stunt, his failed stunt over the Snake River Canyon. We talk about it. It's all documented in the movie Stuntman, but I think you guys are really going to enjoy this Eddie Braun interview. Talks about being a stuntman. He talks about the stunt. He talks about you know, Evel Knievel, the family, the whole works. If you're an Evel fan, you want to tune into this. If you're just a Hollywood action movie fan, you want to tune into this. Very, very good interview with Mr. Eddie Braun. Coming up next week, we've got my good friend Matt DeAndrea. You know him from Adam Carolla's CarCast. He's also got a couple other podcasts he hosts. Also does CarCast with Bill Goldberg in addition to Adam Carolla. He's also got, I don't know, a ton of cars. He helps with Adam Carolla's car collection. It's just a fun interview. You know, we talk a lot about SEMA, which is next week, so I think you guys are going to enjoy that one. And then coming up after that, we've got AJ Buckley. He is a Hollywood action movie guy with a new Navy SEALs TV show, SEAL Team. I'd love to have him on the show. I think we talk a lot about, you know, just to Hollywood and him making it. And, you know, he's a big, you know, big motorsports guy and things like that. So great catching up with AJ Buckley. And then following that, we've got one of the legendary WWE female wrestlers, Miss Tori Wilson, right after WWE Evolution. She's coming on the podcast, and we're going to catch up with her and find out what wrestling legend does once they retire. So looking forward to that as well. Thank you, guys. Thanks for everybody for tuning in my other show, the Down and Dirty Radio Show, that is available on Tuesdays online, weekends in national syndication, also here on the Podcast One Network. Same thing, go over to iTunes, hit the subscribe button, rate and review that one. It's all motorsports all the time, a little bit different than this show. So if you're a racing fan, you're going to love that show. So thank you guys. It's at JimBeaver15, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You can join me. I love getting tweets and Instagram DMs. And, you know, you guys tell me what you want on the show, what you like to hear about. You know, feedback. I love hearing from you fans. Or you can check out my website, downanddirtyshow.com. Use a contact form there as well. Got my boy Chris Leone. He drops all kinds of motorsports and automotive news and knowledge on the daily basis over there. So thank you guys. If you haven't checked it out, you're going to enjoy that one. We've got a Facebook group. It's talking action sports and motorsports and automotive car culture. It's Jim Beaver's Action Motorsports Discussion. We just clipped in 1,100 members on the group. Lots of people chatting there, posting up pictures and articles and all kinds of shenanigans. And then Instagram, we've got a second account. It's at Down and Dirty Show. Make sure and follow that second Instagram account. If you guys want to meet me in person, I will be out at Camp Razor this weekend at Glamis. I'll be doing a live radio show there, or live podcast, I should say. We're recording it for upload into the network. But I will be shredding some razors. I'll be around the Razor Village there. Most of the day Friday, I've got to check out on Saturday. But you can swing by, catch me, and love to meet you fans. Also, I will be out at SEMA. I will be there SEMA week. I'll be in the Vision Wheel booth on Tuesday and be hanging out at SEMA most of the week. So make sure and DM me or ping me on social media if you want to catch up with me. Monday night, I will be emceeing the Off-Road Hall of Fame induction ceremony at the South Point. So if you don't have tickets to that yet, you should go and get them now because they are selling out quick. I think there's only a couple of them left. That coming up this Monday. So thank you guys once again for tuning in to the show. Before we get to these couple of amazing interviews, I do want to tell you about a few of our amazing partners. One of them is AMSOIL. And you know the importance of using a good synthetic oil in your power sports equipment. But what about your daily driver? Well, today's downsized turbocharged engines run hotter and create more engine-damaging contaminants than ever before. Yesterday's motor oil just doesn't cut it in today's engines. That's why you need AMSOIL Synthetic Motor Oil. Teams in Monster Energy Supercross, AMSOIL Championship Snowcross, and more rely on AMSOIL Synthetic Motor Oil to protect their engines on the track and in the haulers that get them to the races, and so should you. AMSOIL's Signature Series Synthetic Motor Oil delivers 75% more engine protection against horsepower loss and wear than required by industry-leading standards. It provides the next level of protection today's demanding engines need to keep them running for years. Go to AMSOIL.com/Beaver and find out how AMSOIL Synthetic Motor Oil keeps your vehicle running great tomorrow. And you know, we've got our good friends over there at True Car, and they've got some useful car tips you might not be aware of. Coffee filter and a little bit of olive oil, it'll clean your interior. You know, removing excess weight from your car will improve your gas mileage, and you can place your key fob to your chin and increase its range. That's all weird, right? Well, here's another tip you might not be aware of. True Car also helps people get used cars. That's right. True Car isn't just for buying new cars. With their certified dealer network and nationwide inventory of nearly 1 million used cars, you'll enjoy real pricing on actual inventory and a simple buying experience, whether you buy new or used. And with True Car, users can see what other people paid so they know when they're getting a good deal before they buy. They're also more likely to enjoy a faster buying experience by connecting with True Car certified dealers. And when you're ready to buy new or used, check out True Car and enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states. And you know, everybody's got a to-do list, whether it's drop off the dry cleaning, picking up some milk, paying some bills. Well, I've got an idea. Let's save hundreds of dollars on car insurance to that to-do list. And the good thing is, you don't have to go anywhere, you don't have to drop off anything, and you don't have to pick anything up. All you have to do is go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you listening here, could be saving 15% or more on car insurance. Extra money in your pocket just may be the most rewarding thing that you do today. And thank you guys for tuning in once again. We are going to roll right into some of these amazing interviews. Right now, we're going to roll into Dave Mason with BetOnline.ag. I'd like to welcome one of my guests to the show this week, Dave Mason with BetOnline.ag, one of the big sponsors here on Podcast One Sportsnet. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Thanks. Thanks for having me once again.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. I know last time we talked about the big one, it was Conor and Khabib. That ended up being fireworks in more ways than one. How did things work out for you guys in BetOnline.ag with that big fight?
That was a great result for us. We needed the public was all over Conor. I know we just discussed that before the fight, but all the late action on Conor as well. I think about like 82 or 83% of the bets were on Conor. So we were huge Khabib fans. So he cashed for us. So it was a great event, and it was his biggest bet UFC fight and the biggest result for us in the history of any kind of MMA fight. So all good for Bet Online on that fight.
Yeah, well, and I know, like, right now it seems like fall season, man. There is so much stuff cranking. Well, I guess we got to talk about baseball and football and a little bit of basketball and hockey here in a minute. But I know right now, I mean, I'm just looking up at this slate of UFC fights, and this has got to be exciting for you guys in the betting business because, you know, not only do we just have that big one with Conor and Khabib, but we're going to turn right around, and we got Derek Lewis and Daniel Cormier. And this one, man, you want to talk about a guy with knockout power, Derek Lewis. This guy is Mr. Excitement.
Yeah, his stock went up big time after that fight a few weeks ago. He's getting battered that whole fight, and he just loaded up that right hand, and that guy can knock anybody out with one punch. And then, of course, his post-fight interview when he took his pants off or whatever he was doing in there, that guy was a riot. So I think that interview maybe got him a championship fight, I think, just as much as that knockout. Just, you know, it's all about money some of these fights, and, you know, Derek Lewis gained like a million Instagram followers or something after that fight. It's going to be an interesting one. You know, that card, that UFC 230, has been decimated by injuries, but DC stepped up to be in the main event. We opened at -800 favorite against Lewis, and it's up to -900. So Derek's got a puncher's chance, but I'm not optimistic against DC. I think DC is going to take him down, wear him down. Lewis doesn't have a good cardio. DC can go for a while, so we'll see. Should be fun.
Like you said, he's got a puncher's chance in that one. I think what we've learned from Derek Lewis is also takes his one punch, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And that in this sport, you know, you hear that puncher's chance, but he's the epitome of it. That punch is about as hard as anybody. So
yeah, well. And this one, you go up, to the next big UFC pay-per-view. And this one, you know, you want to talk women's MMA, and I'm looking at this going, this is probably, and I think it's going to build as we get closer, but I'm looking at this going, Joanna versus Valentina Shevchenko. To me, this is one of the biggest female fights in history, you know, and I think this one is going to be exciting for both a fan standpoint and a betting standpoint.
No, absolutely. Two great strikers. They have a history in kickboxing. I think Valentina's 2-0 against Joanna. The former former 115 champ against 135 Valentina. She never got the belt there, but she's darn close. So they're going to fight for the 125 belt, and Valentina's the -265 favorite. Take back on Joanna is +225. But yeah, that's shaping up to be a pretty good card. You know, you got Brian Ortega and Max Holloway for the featherweight. Holloway's down to the -126 favorite. He opened at -140 favorite. So that's going to be a hell of a scrap right there.
Yeah, they've got a couple of big pay-per-views lined up. But, you know, we're talking MMA, but you want to talk about regular sports. And I think the month of October, I mean, we got Major League Baseball playoffs. We've got the World Series coming up. Obviously, NFL is now in full swing. We've also got NBA and NHL starting. I mean, you guys are really, really busy over there right now, I got to think.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the odds, guys, the guys moving in numbers, this is their probably – most challenging month of the year because you have all four the sports in progress at once. The only thing we're missing really is college basketball, and that starts up in a few weeks. But yeah, I mean NFL. I mean, congratulations to the bettors. They beat the heck out of us this past weekend. It was the biggest win of the season for the bettors. We no complaints. We've had a very profitable football season in the NFL and in college, but this past weekend, holy cow, did the bettors kill us with the Patriots, the Vikings, and a few other games went their way, and we really got the tar beat out of us. So congrats to the bettors. But the way I look at it, that just means more people betting this coming weekend.
Yeah, you know, and that being said, this has been a pretty wild NFL season. I think there's a lot of storylines that, you know, we weren't expecting. Some teams doing a little bit better, some big upsets. I mean, you know, like you said, a weekend like last weekend, you know, the bettors came out victorious on that one.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, that's part of it. I mean, it has been a pretty unpredictable season, and when it's unpredictable, that's good for the house, because, you know, if they're just betting the Patriots and the Patriots are rolling every week, and some of those are the other heavy favorites and they're rolling every week, that gets predictable for the players, and those sides cover. It's really bad for the house, but it has been a very unpredictable season. But last weekend, yeah, those road favorites were covering, like the public loves those road favorites, so that was bad news for the house.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, talking about the NBA season, I know, you know, obviously I'm here in Arizona. I'm a big Phoenix Suns fan. We came out of the gate swinging and then all of a sudden lost our luster at the second game. But, you know, I know that we're only a couple games into the season now. NBA's kicking off. I mean, you know, this is going to be, I think, a pretty exciting NBA season as well. I mean, what, you know, what are the prospects for you guys this season? What should fans be looking at?
Yeah, well, I mean, people love to bet the NBA. It's such a long season. It starts off a little slow, but it picks up. You know, football is still the main sport right now. And, you know, the World Series, of course, that gets a lot of action. So NBA and college basketball, once that tips off, it's always kind of a slow start. You got the diehards betting in the beginning, but it picks up action second half of the season. But, yeah, it looks like it's the Golden State Warriors versus everybody. I mean, the Warriors are minus 175 to win another title this year. Next up is Celtics at plus 600, Rockets 10-1, Raptors 12-1, Lakers 14-1 goes down from there. So, you know, it's going to, the main storyline here is what team has the best chance at dethroning the Warriors, because they've just been so dominant over recent years.
Yeah, well, and how is LeBron going to the Lakers? How has that shifted betting on the Lakers? I got to think there's a few extra people throwing some money down on Los Angeles right about now.
No, you're absolutely correct. They're the top. They're the number three team bet on to win the championship, right after the Warriors and the Celtics. Next most bet team is the Lakers. Every game they've played so far, the public is on the Lakers. So we're always rooting for the team that the Lakers are playing. So yeah, they're gonna be a public team unless they don't. You know, the public can turn real quick if they start. They haven't covered yet this year. It's only the season's only two games young for them. So, but if they, you know, struggle and they don't cover, then the public will turn on them. But so far they're a public team, and I expect that most throughout the season.
Yeah, well, and that being said, we got to talk about the big one. You know, I'm a big baseball fan. World Series coming up, obviously. You know, we got playoffs kind of wrapping up, and then we've got the World Series. I mean, you know for our bettors out there, I mean, you know, what are some of the, you know, what are we looking at for the rest of baseball season? What's out there left for bettors, I should say?
Well, the World Series, it's you know, it's only 4-7 games, but those 4-7 games get bet so much. So, you know, a lot of guys don't bet all regular season, but these games, they bet, you know, it's the World Series, the playoffs, whatever. They'll bet those even though they really don't bet during the regular season. So, there's early action's piling in. We got the series price. The Red Sox are minus 158 to win the World Series. Dodgers would pay plus 138 if they win the World Series. Game one odds went up a little bit earlier. We're the first book on the planet to put up game one odds. The Red Sox opened as minus 142 favorites, so the take back on the Dodgers is plus 132. We have dime lines up to minus 185, so we have some of the best value out there for MLB bettors. So, yeah, it's going to be, I mean, two big teams like that. Both East Coast versus West Coast, we're expecting record action for the World Series this year. So come and get it.
Yeah, you know, and I you know, talking about that, I got to think, you know, a Red Sox and Yankees versus the Dodgers, that got to be, you know, either one of the East Coast teams, and then, you know, talking about the Dodgers, that's got to be some of the biggest, you know, betting in, you know, I mean, three of our biggest cities, right? And I mean, you know, Boston and Los Angeles, that's a big series.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's two huge cities, East Coast versus West Coast. I mean, we were rooting for the Brewers because we needed them in our futures, World Series futures. They would have been a huge win for the house. But, you know, deep down inside, you think, well, the Brewers, Brewers, Red Sox, whatever, might not get as much action. But, you know, Red Sox, Dodgers, that's two of the biggest teams in history. And East Coast, West Coast, huge city. Both huge cities. So yeah, we're going to get some record action. I think that the early numbers are trending towards record action for this World Series.
Nice. Well, anybody that wants to get in the game here, betonline.ag, you know, where do people need to go, and what do they need to do to sign up?
Betonline.ag. You'll see plenty of buttons there on their site to join now and sign up. It takes about 2 to 3 minutes to sign up. Pick your favorite deposit method to load up your account. I think you use Podcast One promo code for 50% bonus, and bet the weekend's games with your big your bankroll. It will put on 50% extra on top of your deposit, so you have plenty of money to last through the weekend.
All right. Well, I appreciate the time, Dave. Always fun catching up, my friend. We'll definitely have to do it again soon.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
Always fun catching up with Dave Mason with betonline.ag, great partner of this show as well as Podcast One. He's always got the lowdown, the tips on how to make you more money. And you know, October means one thing in sports. It's excitement. NFL, college football, Major League Baseball playoffs, every pitch, every swing, every play is important. You don't want to miss out on all the action and fun, so head over to betonline.ag today, make your online wagers, and take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. All you have to do is use promo code PODCAST1 and get a 50% sign-up bonus today. That's PODCAST1 and get 50% sign-up bonus today. BetOnline.ag. It's the biggest names, the biggest teams, the biggest moments all month long in October. BetOnline.ag, your online sportsbook experts and the exclusive partner of Podcast One Sportsnet. Use the promo code PODCAST1 and get a 50% sign-up bonus today. Thank you, Dave Mason. Thank you, BetOnline.ag. And we're going to roll right into this amazing interview with stuntman Eddie Braun. All right, I'd like to welcome Eddie Braun with the movie Stuntman. I guess Stuntman with the movie Stuntman, a movie about your jump over Snake River Canyon. But welcome to the show, Eddie.
Jim, thank you so much. Let me start out by saying I'm humbled and I'm flattered to be on your show. So thank you so much for having me, Jim.
Yeah, no, you know, this is funny because I've known about this jump for, I don't know, a couple years now, right? And They sent me an email and said, hey, would you be interested in Eddie? And I'm like, is this even a question? I'm like, absolutely. And I'm like, out of all the guests in my show, like, I resonate with what you do more than most of the people I interview. So I'm so excited about this interview.
Well, Jim, let me start out by telling you, you know, I'm pre-warning you, I guess. You know, there's a reason that I'm a stuntman and not an actor. You know, the actors do the lines. I'm not really used to speaking publicly, so you'll have to just bear with me, and your listeners will just kind of have to bear with me, because this is a bit unnerving for me, actually, to be honest.
Well, we definitely don't want it to be nerve-wracking at all, but you know, it's funny, just, you know, your occupation, like I said, me being a professional off-road racer, and I've got a ton of friends in the stud industry. Most of them drive cars and things like that. You know, you do things on another level. But I've been fortunate enough to, even guys like with this jump, I mean, Travis Pastrana is a very close friend. And we teamed in a race car last year together and did a race together. And I know he just recreated some of Evil's jumps. So, like, having you on and being able to talk about, you know, this iconic jump that Evil did and now that you've done, like, I don't know, to me, this is just, this is awesome. So, man, welcome to the show, Eddie.
Well, thank you. Thank you. You know, I actually met Travis for the first time the night of his jump.
Oh, did you really?
We'd always crossed paths. We had mutual friends, but we never actually met. And then I met him the night of his jump. I was thrilled for him.
Yeah. You know, and he's funny because he's such, you know, he's this big larger-than-life personality, but behind the scenes, he's really just the nicest, most humble guy you'll ever meet. You know, and I think people get this big idea of him.
Very sweet.
Yeah, exactly. And his whole family is, and I know, you know, one of his best friends, Jolene, her and I are actually really close friends and have raced together for a couple years now. And it's just everybody around that situation. I was so excited, you know, because I know what Evil meant to him, and I'm assuming, you know, Evil meant to you the same thing that it did to Travis, you know, and it was this guy that, you know, you just idolized basically, you know, at a younger age, right?
Well, let's start out by saying the man wore a cape. Okay, he wore a cape. No, the whole reason I even ever became a professional stuntman is because I met Evil as a child. I met him at Ascot Park in Gardena as a child. And from that moment on, I never wanted to do anything but be like Evel Knievel. To me, it was like touching Superman's cape.
Yeah, literally. I mean, he was Superman to I don't even want to say a generation of people. I mean, you know, his legacy lives on today. You ask kids that are 5 years old, Evel Knievel, they know who he is.
Yeah, absolutely. Evel Knievel stands for, you know, America. It stands for going for it. It stands for the real deal. I mean, there was nothing phony or manufactured about that guy. He just was who he was.
Yeah. You know, and take us through that, because, you know, I know a lot of people growing up, you said you met him at Ascot at a young age, and a lot of people, you know, they meet people and then they go, hey, I want to do that when I get older. But as I know, I mean, becoming a stuntman, I mean, it's, you know, I guess there's training and things like that you can go through. But, I mean, take us through the process. Well, you as a young kid, how did you go down that path?
Well, Jim, first of all, becoming a stuntman nowadays, it's a completely different business. Now it is truly a business. And now a lot of the stunts aren't even done for real. You have aids of computer-generated imagery. You have aids of cables and whatnot that they can paint out. So the stunts of today are not the stunts of yesterday when you really had – we used to call it when I was a kid – they would call it, all right, kid, get ready to eat asphalt. And literally, you ended up eating asphalt. Nowadays, people go into pads, and they paint the pads out later in post-production. So it's a different time and a different era now, even as far as being a professional stuntman.
Yeah. Well, and I know just from me, from the professional race car driver side of things, I mean, I got into some crashes early on in my career, and I'm only 37, but – you know, and I hate to say it, but, you know, things with like Dale Earnhardt and things like that, just the safety in race cars has come so much farther. Where I've, you know, as recently as last year, I got into a really bad end-over-end crash in the desert. I mean, we were end-over-end seven or eight times at 80, 90 miles an hour. And, you know, it's one of those things where I look back and I go, you know, 15 years ago, I could have been dead. Now I just got out of the car and walked away. You know, but I know the safety that we've got has come come through tenfold. But I got to assume the things in the stunt industry is the same way.
Yes. Yeah, the evolution of the technology. Personally speaking, I think it's good and bad, though. I think it's bad in a sense because it takes away the realism. I mean, I go to some of these movies these days, and I'm, like, so bored with the phoniness. And I'm proud to say, in my film, there is no CGI. There is no computer-generated image. It is as real as it gets. And I've said that over and over. And all the stunts you see are real stunts, and they're as real as it gets. So I'm proud of that because the films nowadays – that I work on, some of them that have all that computer imagery, it's a bit much for my personal tastes.
Yeah. Well, and you can tell the difference, and I actually liken it to the music industry. I mean, you know, some of these guys have played in bands in the 70s and 80s and the iconic sounds. I mean, Kiss is for one. I mean, I recently saw, you know, Kiss about a year ago in concert, and they're just as good live as they were, you know what I mean, back in the 80s. Oh. But there's bands now where everything's done post-production, you know, and they don't sound anywhere near like they did.
Jim. No, Jim, I'll tell you what. I just went and saw a buddy of mine, Slash, play. He's on tour with Miles Kennedy and the Conspirators. And I mean, you go see Slash and Miles. Plus, Miles is really singing. I mean, unbelievable, the voice of an angel. And Slash is really playing the guitar. I mean, it's just incredible, the rock and roll that these guys are doing. And they're doing it for real. There's no, you know, it's just, yes. So you're right to mix the music in with it as well. Nowadays, most things are manufactured, and you don't know if it's real or not.
Yeah. Well, you know, in talking about that, I mean, obviously I was looking down, you know, your IMDb earlier today. For those of you tuning in don't know, it's Internet Movie Database. But I was just looking at the list of films that you've been a stuntman on, and you want to talk about, I guess, some of the biggest action movies of the past, you know, few decades. I mean, you've been involved in those. I mean, this, some of these stunts are just that you've been a part of in these productions. I mean, it's, I don't want to call it, you know what I mean? It's just, it's a list of some of the biggest movies I can remember.
Well, I have been very, very blessed, fortunate, and lucky. I've always said, I'd rather be lucky than good any day of the week. I've founded a career on it because you can learn to be good. You cannot learn to be lucky. And I've been very lucky. And I have been fortunate to be on some of the biggest action films. I'm quite proud of it. I mean, it's, you know, I was involved in all three of the Jackie Chan Rush Hour movies as a stunt coordinator. And I did a lot of stunts in them. And, you know, that to me, going to work is pretty cool. Working with Mr. Jackie Chan, it's like, in my world, that's like when you've reached the top, the Super Bowl of filmmaking.
Yeah, and Jackie Chan does a lot of his own stunts, correct?
Oh, he's more talented than some of the stunt guys I've seen. Jackie was raised in the circus, and he's got the heart of a gold, and he's got the heart of a stuntman. Jackie gets in there with the best of them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, take me through the evolution of this, because like we said, you've accomplished a lot in your stunt career. I mean, just looking at, like I said, the films that you've been involved in, and I know, you know, watching your movie Stuntman, you know, they said you got recognition early on, and in the stunt industry, I mean, it's all about recognition, but you were always pushing the envelope, and you were always trying to not top everybody else, but top yourself, right?
Well, Jim, here you have to take it back to the era. I was 17 years old. Stuntmen, most people didn't know what stuntmen did. That was before the internet. That was before the behind the scenes. That was before even cable TV. So they didn't have specials on stuntmen. Most people didn't know what they did. Yeah. So it was a very closed-knit community. And most of those guys, not all, but most were cowboys, you know. And if you know anything about cowboys, they're a rough bunch, you know. And they don't BS a lot. It's what you do, not what you say. So as a 17-year-old kid coming up into this, at that time you were referred to as a peckerneck. You had to go through peckerneck tech before they ever gave you a shot in the NFL.
Yeah.
In other words, you better be really tough, and you better really do what you say you're going to do, because you're not going to get another chance with these guys. And what I learned is, if you did what you said you were going to do, and you listened and pay attention and you were humble, they'd give you another shot. And every time they gave you a shot, if you did the right things at the right time and what you said, they'd give you another shot. So after a while, you'd get a reputation of doing what you say you could do, and you'd be dependable. And at that point, I remember one day, I don't remember the exact day, but one of the older cowboy stuntmen came up to me and said, you know, he said, "Eddie Braun, you're in the NFL now. You're out of peckerneck tech. You graduated." And, you know, they'd give you more and more stunts. So it was more about impressing these tough cowboys than it was trying to top. You know, you didn't want to be the best or the furthest. You just wanted to do your job and let these guys know that you had a lot of heart. Yeah. Back then, heart mattered a lot.
Yeah. You
wanted
to call
back,
so right?
As you built that reputation, they'd give you more and more things.
Well, I guess
it's pretty much that simple.
Yeah, you wanted to call back. You wanted to keep getting the work, and so you had to, you know, you had to do, you know, you had to put in the work to get the work, right?
And it wasn't always about doing the greatest stunt in the world. Sometimes it was just about diving into the mud and not being, you know what I'm saying? It was a lot of dirty work as well. But these guys start depending on you and getting used to you, and then you start getting more and more. You know, it's not how fast you can crash a car, or how it's how predictable are you? There's a lot of guys that, "I'll run into a wall as fast as I can." Anyway, good luck with that. You might do that once. It's more about temperament, and I don't know how to explain it, but it's not really a daredevil mentality. In fact, I've always kind of shied away from the term daredevil. I am a professional stuntman. And that's what I love. That's the label that I love. That's the label I've worked very hard to earn. I'm not a Yahoo that'll just go despite contrary beliefs, I'm not a guy that'll just go. I don't care to be the fastest. I don't want to care to be the furthest. I just want to do my job and put in a good day's work and something that I have fun and be proud of.
Well, and you know, that actually resonates a lot with me, because I've started in the past 3 years. I picked up a lot of television voice work for sports and voiceovers and things like that. And, you know, it took me a long time to break in. And then I got that, you know, and it was one of those, put yourself out there. I finally got the first call. They said, "Hey, we had somebody back out. Can you be in Studio City tomorrow morning? We need you to do a, you know, 1 hour voiceover for a TV show on CBS Sports." I said, "Absolutely. I'm there." I was there an hour early. I showed up. I did it. I can't say that it was the greatest voiceover ever, but I was on time last minute. I got it knocked out. I didn't screw up. Let's put it that way. I don't know that I was great, but I didn't screw up. And I was like, okay, you know, they're like, thank you. You know, it was good money, but, you know, it, literally 4 months later, I didn't hear anything. And then they called me back. Same thing. "Hey, can you be here?" "I'll be there tomorrow morning." I was there, you know, and then it's slowly, you start picking up the work. "Hey, this guy can be here. He can do the work." And, you know, now I'm picking up a lot of it, but it was one of those, like you said, it wasn't an overnight where all of a sudden you get boom. You just have to jump at the opportunity, and you have to go in, and you just have to do the job and do it well. And like you said, be dependable.
Well, were a few life lessons I took with me into the stunt business. And they're so apropos now that I'm a on the downside of my career. I've used them a lot. When I was in high school, you know, I'm not a big guy. I'm 5'11" at best, and I'm about 175, 180 pounds. So I'm not a giant guy. In high school, I was a smaller guy, but I played football. And my coach said something to me that always stuck with me. He says, listen, you're not the biggest, right? And you're not the fastest. So you better have something to survive in this game. You better have heart. It's not how many hits you can give. It's how many hits can you take. And man, I was an offensive running back, and I'd get hit by these monsters, and somehow I just, everything within me pulled myself off the ground and get ready like it didn't faze me for the next thing. And I learned that it's not how many hits you can give, it's how many can you take. That transferred pretty good into the stunt business. I mean, you know, you get ready for take two. If you get up fast enough and you're okay, they go, wow, this kid, he just keeps coming back. So that was one of the life lessons I learned is not how many hits you can give, it's how many you can take. The other one was let your yeses be yes and your noes be no. If you say something, do what you say, and don't, you know, let your yeses be yes and your noes be no. That was another life lesson that worked great in the stunt business, because if I said I was going to do something, well, I fully planned on doing it or die trying, you know?
Yeah. Well,
so those are,
yeah. What's that?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well,
no, those are just qualities that. So it's not always about being the fastest or the greatest or the. It's just the day to day grunt work that's going to get you, you know, into the positions.
Yeah. Well, and that goes back. You know, you talked about taking a hit and say you'll do it, you do it. Has there been any time when you showed up on set on one of these movies and go, oh, wow, what did I sign up for today? You know, and obviously you're not backing out, but you're going, man, what am I getting myself into?
Oh, Jim, several times I've done that. Several. Even with this whole rocket thing. Imagine when I opened my mouth and said I was going to attempt something so audacious as to fulfill the dream of my hero. Something my hero was he was unsuccessful at doing. Imagine right after I opened my mouth on that one, where the fear set in.
Well, I got to ask, I mean, the first time you actually saw the canyon in person, what was going through your mind?
Freaked me out. Here's the funny thing. First of all, I'm really scared of heights. So the first time I saw the canyon, like for real, and it's in the film, my director, wonderful guy, Kurt Matilla, sweetheart of a guy. And he said, listen, we're going to, you know, as we're filming, I don't want you to see that canyon in person unless we have cameras on you. And I'm thinking, okay, by the time we got there, I completely forgot about the camera and I saw the canyon. I was overwhelmed. I mean, I went, oh crap. And at that point I had already told everybody I was going to do it. Yeah. It was very scary. In hindsight though, I literally cleared the canyon by a mile.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the canyon's 1600 feet wide, which is like a quarter mile. And the rocket, I went from launch to landing about 5,100 and something, about a mile. So it was a non-event. It was gone in a millisecond from me hitting the button.
Well, we're going to get into the canyon jump here in a second, but because there's a lot about that that I want to touch base on, especially what you just said. But how did the whole canyon jump come about? I mean, I know there was the talk of you going, hey, I'm going to retire at some point. I want to go out. I want to do this. I mean, how did this opportunity present itself?
Okay. Well, it never really presented itself. It wasn't like I walked into something like a movie set. Usually show up and the stunt or the movie is already in production. All you got to do is fill in the blanks. This was like very raw. mentally, okay, I'm 55 years old. I've always thought, you know, you never want to be the last guy at a party. When I first got into the business, an old time stunt guy said to me, he said, you know, son, you never really retire from this business. This business retires you. And that stuck with me. I went, wow, you know, do I want to like overstay my welcome in this business? Like I said, I've been very proud and very lucky to have a career that I'm very proud of. But there's a time to start thinking about saying goodbye and moving on to something else.
Yeah.
Again, like I said, you never want to be the last guy at a party. So I thought to myself, I have, at least within myself, I think I've acquired the skill level and the mindset to actually try and pull this off, you know, try and finish, you know. And it also bristles me when people say, I do what Evel Knievel couldn't do. That bothers me. I've never said that.
Yeah.
You know, if a relief pitcher comes in the seventh or eighth inning and they all win the game, the whole team wins the game. It's not that the other pitcher sucked. So I didn't really do something Evel Knievel couldn't do. I simply finished what he started.
Yeah.
And, you know, I figured, okay, I have the wherewithal to mentally to do this. This would be my mic drop, basically. I wasn't doing this rocket thing to aspire to a higher level of publicity or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm at the downhill of my career. And so I said, you know, I could do this, and if I survive it and I do it well, this could be my mic drop and I could quietly fade into oblivion. So that's the mindset I went into it with.
Well, and, you know, and
that, Jim, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, well, and that being said, I mean, you know, obviously you started surrounding yourself with some people that were familiar with Evel Knievel's jump, you know what I mean? And, you know, and I know you, the way you did it,
you paid
tribute, you know, it wasn't, like you said, topping Evel, it was paying tribute to a legend, you know, the way you went through it. But talk about the people you surrounded yourself with, because, I mean, these were people that were familiar with the original jump.
Yeah, let's start out by saying there's a very good reason I named my rocket the Evel Spirit and not the Eddie Braun. Okay, this was, in fact, a way to try and finish out something of my hero, Mr. Evel Knievel, the guy that inspired me to even be a stuntman. I mean, Jim, how many people in this world get a chance to finish the dreams of their hero? I venture to guess not many get that chance to finish their hero's dream. And I thought if I could pull this off, I could finish out my hero's dream, and it would be a hell of a way to say thank you for inspiring me to be everything that I am professionally. So that was kind of the mindset. Well, after that, much like stunts, you got to surround yourself with people that are better than you. I was very fortunate from the onset to hook up with Scott Truax. And Scott, what a sweetheart of a guy that guy is. Scott Truax is actually the son of Bob Truax, who built the original rocket for Evel. You know, Scott was a kid during that time, and he watched it all. I mean, he had Evel Knievel's rocket in his garage. How cool is that as a kid? But I teamed up with Scott Truax, and Scott had all the plans from his father. He also had spare parts from his father.
Wow.
So what he didn't have was the person that would, you know, pull it all together financially or technically or anything else to you know, he always wanted to do that to clear his father's name. So I was very fortunate to team up with Mr. Truax and his attitude and his heart, just a sweetheart of a guy. I mean, anyway, so we teamed up together. The next thing was getting the blessings of the Knievel family, right?
Yeah.
Because I could not do this thing if I did not have their blessings. If I did it on my own, I would consider myself no better than a really bad Elvis impersonator, you know? So I had to have the blessings of the Knievels. And that was not an easy task itself. I called Kelly Knievel, who is Evel's eldest son, Kelly, and he hung up on me in the first 5 minutes. You know, I just cold called him. I said, hey, Kelly Knievel, my name is Eddie Braun. I'm a professional stuntman. I want to try and, you know, do the canyon. And I hear this, yeah, right, and hung up on me. I'm like, crap, that didn't go so well. So, and by the way, Kelly and I are very good friends now. I love Kelly. He's a crud. He's much like his father, I guess, but I love the guy to death. So once I had Scott Truax telling me the Knievel name behind me, then it was just put all the pieces in place, do all the hard work and the homework, much like a feature film when we do action sequences. You know, we plan all those things out, we do everything. So it was kind of like that. So that's the long answer to you.
Well, and, you know, I know there was a lot of, you know, watching the film. I've been lucky enough, you know, they sent me a screener of it.
You saw the film?
Yeah, I've seen the film. I watched it this morning, actually. So, no, I've been fortunate enough to see the film.
Tell me, honestly, what did you think? Honestly.
Well, I'm a documentary guy, so I watch a lot of documentaries. And this absolutely, like, it had my attention for the entire, 90 minutes of it. I mean, it was literally, this was, you know, this is something like, I'm just like, wow, like, I want to know more. I love the storytelling and, you know, the background on you and everything, you know, everything that led up to it. And that brings me to my next question. But, I mean, this wasn't one of those, you know, a lot of people see something, all right, we're going to do this 6 months. I mean, this was a roller coaster for you guys and your family as well.
It was beyond a roller coaster. I had no idea what I was in for when I decided I was going to climb into a little rocket and try and fire it across the canyon. I had no idea. It was it's a story behind the story.
Yeah.
It took a commitment level that I didn't even know I'd have to do it.
Yeah. Well,
it was rough. I will say it was rough. I learned a lot about people during the process of this.
Yeah, well, you probably learned a lot about yourself and your family as well. I mean, this was, you know, like,
yes,
there were some emotional moments in it.
Well, I had to look at, you know, right from the beginning, I had to say to myself, okay, what am I doing and why am I doing it? Those were fundamental questions I had to ask myself. Evel Knievel's quote was so poignant, and I get it now. He said early on, Evel Knievel, his own words, he says, you've got to be willing to cross a canyon for nothing before you'll do it for anything. And boy, was he so right. You know, most people a lot of people opened their mouths, which really muddied the water for me. A lot of people said, yeah, I'm going to do that, or I'm going to try and do that. And what it did was I really was going to try it. And all these other people, they were seeking, I don't know what they were seeking. I think they were seeking a way to get rich or a way to get some fame. And so they threw their name in the hat, and it just really, I was not seeking fame, nor, listen, I work with famous people. I don't want to be famous.
Yeah.
That's dumb, man. I also wasn't seeking fortune. In fact, this kind of cost a fortune to do this.
Yeah. It was just the opposite for you.
So I quickly, excuse me?
I said it was just the opposite for you, this whole project.
Yes, it was. But Jim, it was never about money.
Yeah.
From the beginning, I didn't do that, which leads to the second reason I was going to do it. I wasn't doing it for the money. Never in a million years was I doing it for the money. I wanted to do something that my kids would be proud of. Period, the end. I didn't care what anybody else thought. I wanted my kids to be proud of it. Everybody says, oh, you didn't have a TV deal. You did. Even after Travis's jump, people say, oh, why couldn't you get all that attention and all that? Because I was never seeking that.
Yeah.
I wasn't seeking a TV deal that to me would end up being like a cheesy TV special gone the next day and no one ever heard of it.
Yeah.
I wanted to do something that I was really proud, that my kids would be proud of. And some of that, a lot of that requires no commerce. You're not going to get rich doing that. So, my main things for doing it was to do it something through actions, not words, through actions that my kids would be proud of. And that was my main motivator. So I said I would try and do this thing as best as I could, and I would document it. Those were my two mission statements in doing this thing from the beginning. But boy, it's a lot easier said than done.
Yeah, to be a man of your word, sometimes it's pretty tough.
Jim, I will tell you, 90% of the deals that I made, 90% were handshake deals.
Yeah. Wow.
But that's the only way that, listen, to show Scott Truex didn't know me from Adam.
Yep.
When we started this thing out, did not know me from Adam. So I actually met him on Facebook, believe it or not, right? I said, hey, I'm Eddie Brown. Look me up, right? Which he did. I said, I'm a legitimate, you know, stuntman. So he looked me up, and then he called me back. He said, okay, yeah, what's up? Let's do this. He goes, yeah. You know, he too has heard it all from everybody.
Yeah.
So you know what I did to show him I was serious? Now, most people may say it's stupid, but in hindsight, it's probably very smart. I said, I am so serious, Scott. We'd never met, right? We talked, but we never. I said, I am so serious. I'm going to send you a check, $10,000. You get that check, you cash it, and you'll know I'm serious. So, Jim, I sent, again, could have been the stupidest thing or it could have been the smartest thing, but I sent him a check before I'd even met him for 10 grand to show him how serious I was. And I'm not a rich guy, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. But when he got that check, he sure knew I was serious.
Yeah. That opened the door. Oh, this guy's a real deal. He's not in it for the money. He already gave me 10 grand.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But my gut instincts in talking with them, you know, it's like stunts. You do things on a lot of gut instinct.
Yeah.
I mean, you could be wrong, but you most of the time you could be right if you follow your gut. In talking with Scott, the way he was on the phone, my gut told me he's a pretty sincere guy. So I'm going to bet on that. And so I sent him a check for 10 grand. When he got it, cashed it, he knew I was serious.
Yeah. Well,
and that's kind of how the project kind of went. You know, same thing with Kelly Knievel. Okay, so Kelly hangs up on me in 5 minutes, hangs up on me. Again, this is a true story. I finally get back to Kelly again. I try him again. I say, Kelly, here's my name, Eddie Braun. Just look me up. You'll see that at least I'm kind of legitimate, right?
Yeah.
So he does that. He says, what do you want? I said, I'll tell you what I want, Kelly. If I can just have 15 minutes of your time, that's all I want, 15 minutes of your time to talk to me, and I'll tell you what I'm planning. Now, Kelly lives in Las Vegas. You know, I live in Los Angeles. So I fly. First of all, Jim, am I like boring? I could sit here.
No,
I'm so nervous in this interview. I just keep talking, you know.
No, I'm into it. You've got me hooked on this story. So, no, I'm quiet because I'm listening.
All right, you just shut me down if I've got like running of the mouth here.
No, absolutely not, man. I'm so into this right
okay.
now. You got me hooked.
So Kelly agrees. He says, okay, I'll meet you. You got to come out here to Vegas. And I said, great, I'll meet you. So he tells me to meet him at this little greasy spoon diner of his he eats breakfast at, right?
Yeah.
So in my plan, in my head, I had a plan. My rocket was going to be called the Evil Spirit. That was in my head. It was going to be that no matter what. Now, legally, I could call it the Evil Spirit with an I, E-V-I-L, Evil Spirit. I could call it that. It would suck and it would look bad on the thing because it's a total misspelling, but I could do that legally. However, I could not spell it evil the way evil spelled, E-V-E-L.
Yeah.
I could not spell that legally. I would be sued and shut down. And Kelly's the guy that was, they're very protective of the brand. Okay. So I knew this going into the meeting with Kelly. I could spell it with an I. I could not spell it with an E. So what I did was I gambled again. I flew out with a paper bag to Vegas with $10,000 in cash, $100 bills in a bag. I met Kelly at the diner, the Greasy Spoon, and I had a little brown paper bag with me. And I said, you know, I really briefly said, Kelly, my name's Eddie Braun. You obviously did the homework on me. I want to attempt this. I want to call my rocket the Evil Spirit. And he kind of looked at me. I go, okay. I said, I want to call that Evil Spirit with the proper spelling, E-V-E-L, Spirit. And here is $10,000. To get your permission to let me spell it that way. Now, mind you, I didn't have even the land yet at this point. Kelly kind of looked at me. He looked at the money sitting in front of him because I pushed it $10,000 in front of him on the table. He goes, what? You want to buy an E? What are we playing, fucking Jeopardy? I said, yes, I want to buy an E for 10 grand. He looked down at the money, grabbed it, said, you just bought yourself an E, kid. And then we signed a napkin to give me permission to call my rocket the Evil Spirit. But that's the truth. You can ask Kelly Knievel that. He says, and I don't know if we can say that on your radio, but he says, well, you want to buy a friggin' E? But he didn't say friggin'.
Yeah. That's great.
So, but again, that showed Kelly Knievel something, that I meant what I said about at least trying it. So, you know, that kind of opened the door with him. And, you know, and I understand because Kelly Knievel, the Knievels have heard everything from everybody. I mean, everybody said they were going to do it. There's a reason this canyon had not been crossed in 42 years. because everybody talked a great game, but nobody really did anything.
Yeah. Everybody was looking for the cash in.
Oh, go ahead.
I just said everybody was looking for the cash in on the Knievel name, and like you said earlier, fame and fortune. You know, it's like, how can we make a quick buck?
Everybody, absolutely. And I saw that abundantly clear once I got going. And then what I call the glommers. A lot of people tried to glom on to me once they saw I was actually really going to try this. That's a whole nother episode.
Yeah.
But okay, so early on, I had the support of Scott Truax, who's the lineage builder of, you know, the Rocket and all of that. And I had support of the Knievel family behind me. At that point, I felt legitimate. I didn't feel like a bad Elvis impersonator, you know? Again, not to take anything away from anybody else, okay? But you probably will never see me wearing a cape or the whole red, white, and blue star, you know, the evil. Because to me, I'm saying this to me personally, it all just seems like Elvis impersonators.
Yeah.
And it seems a bit sacrilegious. I've always said there's only one Evel Knievel, and I certainly am not him, nor do I even claim to be. I'm simply the little kid that was inspired by him. So I will never wear a cape, and I will never wear the red, white, and blue quite like Mr. Knievel did, because I'm not him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, but I think you had the right people around you that it made this an authentic jump, you know what I mean? And obviously, you know, you had the symbology on the Rocket and things like that. I mean, the authenticity of Evel was there, you know, and I think, like you had said, it was all about paying tribute to a legend.
Well, I looked at it as if I did this from the heart, not from the wallet, but from the heart. I may be called foolish, but at least I could sleep at night if I did it from the heart. If you try and do it from the wallet, it's just not going to be the real deal. Then it becomes about commerce and everything else. While I'm not the best businessman in the world, clearly, I sunk a fortune. I had to end up sinking a fortune. So I'm not the best businessman. I can't sleep well at night.
Yeah, definitely. Well, and take us, okay, you know, so now we've got, you know what I mean, the ducks in a row. You know, you've got the Rocket. Take us through this.
No,
jump.
Don't have a Rocket yet. I got the people that. Oh, you want to take? Okay,
well,
so
no,
I got
no,
a
no.
Rocket.
Take
okay,
us through
ahead.
The Rocket, because I'm sure there's a great story with the Rocket. So I mean, because I know in the video or in the movie, I mean, you got a chance to see the original Rocket. You know what I mean? And actually put your hands at, see it, feel it, touch it. You know, and I mean, take us
I
through.
Climb
that.
In it. I climbed in it.
Yeah. So take us through that part. You know, with getting and acquiring
scared
this
the
Rocket.
Hell out of me.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I climbed into Evel's actual Rocket, and two things became abundantly clear. First, it felt a little sacrilegious climbing into his Rocket. Yeah. Again, it's, you know, to me, that was hallowed ground. I mean, that thing was on my lunchbox as a little kid. So I climbed into the Rocket. The second thing that became abundantly clear is, hell, this is nothing but a tin can. I mean, this isn't even a tin can. It's like, you know, and Kelly, who's got a very morbid sense of humor, I love him. He says, yeah, it could be your little tin coffin. Like, great. Yeah, Kelly just laughed and said, yeah, it could be your tin coffin. Great. Just what I wanted to hear.
Right? I guess if you're Knievel, you've got to have that sense of humor, though, right?
Oh, yeah. I love Kelly's sense of humor. I can see, however, I did not know his father. I can see a lot of his father in him, just his personality.
So take us to getting your own Rocket, you know what I mean? And the Rocket that you ultimately, you know, jumped the canyon in, you know? I mean, because, you know, I know that, you know, there's got to be a lot of science that goes into this, even though, I mean, I know at some point, like
you think that, Jeff. Right? You would think that. Okay. Part of the other thing in me doing it, in order for it to be something really cool, I mean, come on, scientifically, it's no great feat to get across that canyon. I mean, I could have hopped in a little Cessna and got across it, or I could have had a carbon fiber wing and got across it. So with modern computers and carbon fiber, it's not a big deal to cross that canyon. However, if you do it like Mr. Knievel did, that opens up a whole nother thing. So basically, my Rocket was the same as Mr. Knievel's fit, form, and finish. So you're talking about spare parts, and the same technology from almost 50 years, 42 years ago. It was a tin can with no carbon fiber, no computers, no modern anything. That changes the rules a little bit. Can you imagine, okay, all these motorcycle jumpers, and they're fabulous, and they're unbelievable. I could never do what these guys do, right? But imagine what Evel Knievel was doing with his motorcycles on these jumps.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
He was like trying to fly a brick from ramp to ramp.
Yeah. If he had a modern motocross bike, none of those jumps would have been, you know what I mean, half as hard for Evel, you know? But like you said, knowing what he jumped them on, that's what made the feat so special.
Okay, so when you say, oh, well, your rocket, you know, you have all the modern science. No, I had everything that they had back then.
Okay.
And we functioned a lot on a swag, scientific wild-ass guess, right? You saw that in the movie,
yes,
right?
Yes, I did
scientific
see that. That's wait, swag, is that like Evel Swagger? And then you had said what it meant.
No,
I started laughing.
A swag is an acronym, scientific wild-ass guess. But, Jim, it's founded on two principles. Instinct and experience. Like your instincts and your experience tell you, if you do this, if you do that, you should get this result.
Yeah.
Okay? So here's what we know about Evel's jump. The rocket didn't blow up on the ramp. It actually left the ramp. We knew this, right? Everybody saw that. So we knew if we built the exact same thing, same ramp, same degree, 56 degrees, same everything, we should get the same result. My rocket should leave the ramp, just like Evel's did. You understand where I'm going with this now?
Absolutely.
So now we're using scientific wild-ass guesses, but they're based on some very real realities.
Yeah.
So we built the exact identical thing because everything worked back then. However, obviously, the parachute system. Mine was going to be a hand release, just like Evel's. I would just have to figure out a way, and Scott would have to figure out a way, how I release the parachute, and it doesn't come out too early, and it definitely doesn't come out too late. Neither one of which would have been pretty good. Other than that, everything pretty much would have to be the same, so we could predict more or less the same results. So that's where I'm leading to you. It's pretty much the same thing that Evel Knievel did, just 42 years later.
Yeah. Well, and that was, you know, that's one of the things I was going to say, looking, you know, when they showed in the movie, the interior shots of the cockpit and things like that. Very simple. There wasn't, you know, a bunch of computer systems, no digital displays.
Zero.
Layouts, none of that.
Not
it was
zero.
You had some handles in front of you.
I had some handles in front of me to release the parachute. And I had Scott paint the handles because they had to be in a sequence.
Yeah.
So I didn't know how dazed I would be or if I'd be unconscious. So I had him paint the handles red, white, and blue. Now, I've been knocked out, unfortunately, a few times. And every time I've been knocked out, it was never just an instant lights out. There was like a couple of seconds of wooziness, then the lights out. So I knew within myself, if I started to feel that wooziness, I would pull the emergency chute and then just pray for whatever happens.
Yeah.
I also thought I might be a little foggy in the head, but even foggy, I can remember red, white, in that order, red, white, and blue. Unless you live in France, it's a different, here it's always red, white, and blue.
Yes.
So I knew, dazed, I'd have to pull, the red was the drogue chute because I was going well over 400 miles an hour. You can't open a chute at 400 miles an hour. It just shreds. So you have to open a drogue chute, the little chute, to slow you down. You can't open your main chute until you're going under 200 miles an hour. So I was to pull the red chute, try and count to 10, then pull the white chute, which was my main. And if all of that went bad, there was the oh shit chute, which the blue.
Yeah.
The blue might save my life, but it'd be pretty bad. But pull the blue. If nothing else works, pull that blue and hope to live. It should slow you down enough to keep you alive. So that, you know, so it was pretty like three little handles to pull and make sure you pull them in the right order. And, you know, pretty basic stuff there.
Yeah. Well, and now you've got the rocket, you've got everything lined up. You're on the pad, right? And, you know, I gotta wonder. I mean, you know, like you'd said, we talked about, you know, have you ever been in a situation where you go, yeah, how did I get myself into this, right? You had to have been thinking that when you're on there, because I'm looking, I mean, you look like you're ready to launch to the moon.
Yeah, it was a pretty scary feeling climbing into that thing. I got to tell you, you got to really be ready to meet your maker. I'm a religious guy. You know, I believe in my God. And you know, with what I do and the way I live my life, I'm prepared to meet him. Not that I want to meet him right away, but I'm prepared to meet my maker should that day come. I hope it's not too painful. So I came with that resignation that I had a very, very real possibility of not seeing that sunset that day. You had to be prepared for that. Not that I thought it would ever really happen, but I had to be prepared for it. It'd be foolish not to be prepared for it.
Yeah.
You know, and when I say that, mentally and quite honestly, physically. I mean, the night before, I had dinner with my producer partner, Steve Golubiowski, and I said, Steve, I hate to put this on you, but, you know, because, Jim, my family wasn't there. I did not want my family there for the launch.
Yeah.
I don't have them show up when I do stunts. There's just no reason to have my family there.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm successful, they're going to see it over and over and over. And if I'm not successful, I don't think I want them seeing it. So it was pointless to have them there. However, I had my partner there, Steve Golubiowski. So I had dinner with Steve that night, and I said, Steve, I gotta put something on you. And he said, well, what? Yeah, what? Anything. What do you need? I said, I'm going to sign this. I do things on napkins a lot because they're just easily there. I said, I'm writing on this napkin. You have the power of attorney, and I want you to pull the plug on me. If this goes bad and I'm semi-alive or whatever, you have to promise me you won't let me suffer, and you will pull the plug. He's like, whoa, dude, that's kind of heavy. You know, he's this guy's an athlete, you know, and all of a sudden I'm asking him to pull the plug if it goes bad. But I had to be prepared. I would be foolish if I was not prepared in some way, shape, or form. You know, then I'd just be a yahoo going out there and, here, hold my beer. Let's see what happens, you know?
Yeah.
So there were a lot of things that I had to deal with. But, yeah, it was a very rough day that day, the beginning of it. But, you know, Jim, I go to work, and I don't do a lot of ceremony about it. I just go to work. So I had to treat this like this was nothing more than an action sequence in a movie. I'm going to work, man. I mean, some of the stuff we do at work, you know, on those Rush Hour movies, we did sequences that were unbelievable.
Yeah.
This rocket thing, if you take away all the drama and all the pomp and circumstance, this rocket thing is just a sequence in an action movie. I got to get up to altitude, I got to get a certain distance, and I got to get down from that altitude and stay alive during that. It's an action sequence. So that's how I went about this. I said, I'm a stunt coordinator. I set up elaborate action sequences. Why can't this be any different than that? And that kind of, that made it a lot easier for me.
Yeah. So, you know, we're on the platform now. You know, they say go, and I got to tell you, watching this movie, like, I was thinking, you know, the rocket's going to go up and it's going to have kind of a slow arch, clear the canyon, chutes are going to come out. Like, when you launched, I mean, you know, and you'd said earlier, you went, I mean, you cleared the canyon in the first couple of seconds. I mean, I'm watching this and you're going up and up and up and up and up, and I'm going, are we ever going to stop here?
Well, first of all, here's where the swag comes in. We didn't quite know what to expect if I wasn't dragging a chute. I mean, even Mr. Knievel never felt the full punch of this rocket because he was dragging his laundry from the get-go. So, you know, we didn't know that I was going to travel that far either. I mean, hell, I felt like I was going into the next county by the time I, you know, came down. It was... I like to say that it was like riding an explosion. And the minute I hit that button, it was like, boom. And I barely had the time to think, oh, crap. And I was gone. 0 to 439 miles an hour in less than 3 seconds. I mean, that's smoking, man. I wasn't ready for that. There's no preparation for that.
No. I mean, maybe
it was awful. I would never do that again. Now I know why Mr. Knievel never went back. It sucked. There was nothing about it that was fun.
But I know you said that afterwards. You were cramped. It sucked. It hurt. It was hot. Like, there was nothing exciting from your standpoint.
No, I like to say it was different levels of terror. There were, you know, different levels of terror. There were, even when the parachute came out, it's not like, yes, I got this. I was coming in really fast. I thought I was going to shatter both my legs, my legs in front. So if you can imagine how terrified you'd be at the prospect of smashing both of your legs, you might live, but you're going to have two smashed legs. It's still not fun. You know, there's no part of it that was like, oh, this is fun. It sucked.
Yeah.
I got to tell you.
Well, and what was the deal with the shoots? Because I figured some of it was – there was a little bit of cinematography in the documentary that kind of prolonged the shoot pulling because that's movie magic. But how it took you
well,
a while to get the shoots out, right?
Excuse me?
It took you a while to get the shoots out, right?
Well, what it did was it took a while for my brains to catch up to what was happening. That's what it was.
Okay.
It wasn't that it seemed like an eternity for me. And what happened was the first thing I had to be cognizant of, and if you know anything about parachutes, is am I tumbling end over end? Because the last thing you want to do is pull a parachute when you're tumbling end over end. You're going to turn into one big wad of laundry and come crashing down. So it took me a few moments to realize that I was not tumbling end over end, but I was actually spiraling, which is a good thing. That's like a football thrown perfectly or a bullet that spirals. So when I realized that, then I pulled the drogue chute. And that takes a couple of seconds. Now, mind you, when you're going 439 plus miles an hour, you're covering a lot of ground really fast.
Yeah.
And that's why the distance and everything, because my brain hadn't quite caught up to what was going on. So my actions kind of slowed down a little bit.
Well,
if that makes any sense.
Oh, it makes total sense. And then you pulled the second chute, and that's when you were talking about you knew you were still second chutes deployed. You were still coming in hot.
Yeah, still coming in. In fact, the last words I communicated to Gary Davis, who was on the receiving end, my ground crew, I said, call the ambulance. I'm going to have two busted up legs because I thought for sure that my front legs were going to be smashed up. Thought for sure. How they didn't break. I'll never know.
Yeah. Well, and you know, and as you're coming in, I mean, you've been in a lot of crashes. You know how to prepare to crash, right? I mean, what's going through your mind?
Well, there's not a lot. What's going through my mind? Hopefully, not the ground. No, I mean, listen. You're an action guy. You know when you're going to crash. You know you're going to crash. You just hope it's not going to be that painful.
Yeah.
And my landing, it looks gentle on film. But it was far from that in reality. It was like I knew I was coming in for a crash. I just hoped it wasn't going to be that bad.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's a point, too, where you landed, you know, and I think everybody's waiting for a signal. And I've been in crashes before where you're trying to figure out if you're all right because, you know, all right, it stopped. But is everything here?
Yes.
Am I bleeding? Is something broken? Like, people don't understand that. Like, you first have to check yourself. And it's like because the adrenaline's pumping, you know?
Jim, you said it perfectly. You said it perfectly. I landed, and the first thing I did was look down to see if blood was all down in my legs. And I didn't see blood through my suit. I didn't see any blood. And it felt like have you ever landed from jumping, and you land flat-footed, and it just shoots up your back, and it's kind of you don't know quite what you hurt, if anything. It took me a second to realize, and then I moved my feet. I go, oh, wow, I can move them. It hurts a little bit, but I can move them. So, yeah, it took me a moment to realize I hadn't shattered both my legs.
Yeah. Wow. I mean.
Yeah, it was not. I got to tell you, too, while everybody was in the bar partying that night, I was puking in the room. It did very real physiological damage to my body. I mean. Every day I peed blood for 2 days. Every day I felt worse than the day before.
Wow.
I finally went to the doctors, you know, and it was like they did MRIs. I smashed a bunch of my internal organs all up. But, you know, when you go through 8 Gs, you're smashing a lot of crap inside,
yeah.
You know. Oh, I felt awful. For 2 or 3 days, I kept getting worse and worse, not better. And it was kind of scary, actually.
That is scary. It's yeah. So how was what was the total length of time in the air? I got to ask because
I'm not sure. I mean, I could throw out a number and sound like I knew what I was talking about. I don't have a clue. Far too long for me because I hate heights.
Yeah, it's one of the
far too long.
It's one of those things where it seems fast, especially you watching on TV. But you being in the cockpit there, it was like it seemed like
forever.
Yeah.
Oh, it was terrifying, Jim. It was terrifying. I'm surprised I wasn't screaming like a child. It was horrible, man. That's another reason I'm one and done. Everybody says, "Hey, you're gonna go? What are you jumping now?" I'm jumping nothing like that. I'm one and done.
You've proved
so all the other thrill seekers can go do that. That's not me.
Let somebody else top it, right?
Yeah, exactly. I've never been a guy for records either. I could care less about records, but I was notified. Apparently I broke 4 world records all at the same time doing that. But
wow.
So, you know, Guinness, they contact me and congratulations. You brought it. I said, cool. You know, great. But it's just, yeah, it was not anything I would ever do again. I can clearly tell you that.
Yeah, you're officially retired from flying rockets over canyons.
Yeah, you know, that's another thing that kind of, not bristles me because I'm proud of it, but people call me, hey, Rocket Man. And that doesn't suit right with me either. I told you earlier, I'm very proud of my stunt career. You know, 30 plus years of doing some incredibles. I'm proud of that. And I'm proud of that title. Rocket Man, you know, I would hate that my whole 30-plus year career be defined by 3.9 seconds in a rocket.
Yeah.
It's like, and I did know that if I pulled this off, I would be known more for the 3.9 seconds or so than I would my entire career. I was well aware of that. And like I said, I don't bristle at it, but it's an uncomfortable title. That's the reason my movie is called Stuntman and not Rocket Man.
Yeah. Well, and I think the people that matter realize that, you know, and I know, like you said, the people in the stunt industry, oh, this is awesome that Eddie went out and did this. But I think still they're going to remember you for what you've done on the movie sets and not necessarily the rocket over the canyon.
Well, that's what I'm trying to relay to a lot of people that see the movie, because a lot of people assume it's just about the rocket. Well, the rocket is kind of the backdrop to the whole thing. But as you saw, there's clearly a lot more real stunts in that movie than a rocket.
Well, and some of the car crashes and things like that from, you know, a couple decades ago that they showed, I mean, that stuff, I'm looking at that going, man, those are some brutal, brutal hits that you took.
Well, it goes back to high school. It's not how many hits you can give, it's how many can you take.
Yeah. So,
right?
Yeah. So talking about Stuntman again, I mean, circling back to the movie, I mean, you know, I know, you know, I've read recently The Rock, Dwayne Johnson has got involved, correct? I mean, where can people see this, watch it, experience it?
Well, if everything works out right and all my prayers get answered, it'll be out next year. It'll have a theatrical distribution and people, listen, I'm very proud of the film. You know, a lot of people ask me, is it good? Is it bad? I can't tell you because it's about me. How do you say a movie about you? You describe it. So I can't tell you if it's good or bad. What I can tell you, though, is I'm very proud of it. Every frame of footage I am proud of, good, bad, or indifferent. I'm proud of it. And I want people to see it. I mean, I really want people to see this movie. And hopefully it's an uplifting movie because, boy, I laid it all out there for this film. So the plan is that it'll be distributed, if not late this year, early next year. And I don't know the exact plan yet, but guess what? I got a bunch of really smart people that are helping me figure it out. I've always said, I don't got to be the smartest guy in the room. I just got to know them.
Yeah.
And I know some really smart people. And they're going to figure this out. It's going to premiere this Sunday, the 23rd, in Los Angeles at the LA Film Festival. Okay?
Awesome.
Based on that, you know, because a lot of movie people are going to see it. And based on how well that does will be if everybody sees it or I just end up with a really expensive ass home movie to hand out to my buddies at Christmas,
well,
which is the truth. I mean, if it's well received, then these smart people are going to help me get it out to everybody.
Yeah.
If it falls like a lead balloon, well, send me your mailing address. I'll send you a Christmas gift, my home movie. That's basically the simplest way I could tell you about it.
Yeah, well,
I think it's going to do okay. I got some really, really talented people that are really pushing to help me.
Yeah. Well, and it, you know, that being said, I'm not a movie critic by any means. I watch a lot of movies. I travel enough that I've always, you know, I got something to kill. I got to do something on plane flights, right? I watch a lot of documentaries, and this, I got to say, has been one of the most interesting ones I've seen in quite some time. I loved it from wire to wire. I think it was good. There wasn't really any down parts to me. You know what I mean? As far as like where you lose interest, like, oh, I got to fast forward. I mean, it kept me interested the whole way.
Thank you so much for saying that, because I really poured my heart, my soul, my pocketbook. I put everything into this film. I really did. You know, I had to back up pretty much everything I was doing with my own checkbook. So, you know, they always say put your money where your mouth is. Yeah, I had to put not only my money where my mouth is, where my leg was, where my arm. I mean, I'm all in on this thing.
Yeah, you're definitely all in.
So you know, I just hope I hope that when people see it, they are inspired by it. You know, I did accomplish what I set out to accomplish. I crossed the canyon. I'm proud of that, and my kids are really proud of it. And that's enough for me. Even if I lose my ass financially, that's okay. You know, one of the best gifts I got was when I came home, all my kids were sitting at the table, and my eldest daughter, she's 22, she said to me, she said, Dad, you know, it's going to be really hard for us to say we can't do something when we just watched our dad, who didn't go to college or anything, work his ass off and finish the dream of his hero. And to me, I like wanted to, you know, ball up and cry when I heard that.
Yeah, that's... I mean, that's real. Yeah. I mean, when one of your daughters can say something like that to you, I mean, that makes it all
kids,
worth it, right?
So I gave them a message through actions, not just words. I gave them a message that hopefully will outlast me. And that's all I set out to do from the get-go. I like to say that this film is, through actions, this film is a love letter to my four kids. It really is. Go work your ass off, and even a regular schmuck like me can do something that's kind of cool and epic. That's all I set out to do from the beginning.
Well,
hopefully now the practical is I don't lose my ass financially on it, and I actually get my money back. But it doesn't matter if I don't. I still accomplish what I set out to do initially. Cross the canyon, be proud of it, and have a record of it for my kids.
Well,
what else can I tell you on that? You know, at that point, you know, what do you do after that?
Yeah.
You drop the mic and quietly fade into obscurity.
Yeah. Well, that being said, are you, I mean, you're still doing stunt work though, correct?
Well, yeah, I told you before, I'm not a rich guy. I got to pay my bills. Yeah. I'm a working guy.
Back
you know,
to the
I got
to
go
job.
Out there.
Back to the day job.
Excuse me?
Back to the day job, right?
Oh, totally. By as soon as I came back from crossing the canyon, it's funny. I had about 2 days of rest or whatever. I went right back to work on the set doing something. And a lot of the crew people go, wait, didn't you just fly a rocket across the canyon? And you're like here, you know, crawling on the ground, playing an army man. So yeah, I still got to pay my bills. This was definitely not a get rich scheme. Yeah. I'm a working guy, and I'm trying to retire gracefully as a stuntman. And, until I can financially do that. Yeah. I'm just out there like everybody else working every day and trying my hardest.
Awesome. I think that's funny. Retire gracefully as a stuntman. I don't know if I've ever.
Well, yeah, you want to go out. Like I said, remember, you never want to be the last guy at a party. Yeah. That's pretty bad.
Yeah, I feel you there, man. Well, Eddie, it has been an absolute pleasure to hear the story and to have you on. I honestly think this thing is going to do phenomenal for you guys. I can't wait for people to see it this weekend. You know, I'm looking forward to hearing the feedback because I know I loved it, and I appreciate the hour of time you spent with me, man.
Well, Jim, first of all, thank you for having me again. I hope half your audience is 3/4 of them are probably asleep by now, so you'll have to like hit a loud alarm or something. But thanks for having me. I hope I explained a little bit about why I did it, how I did it, and that's it. I hope the film. I'm scared as hell. I mean, this thing's Sunday. I can't hide behind anybody. If this thing tanks, if this thing is terribly received, it means I'm terribly received, and that's totally scary. I mean, I am nervous. It's easier to go do stunts than it is going to a theater and having everybody see a movie about you. I'm terrified. Yeah. Well, I'm terrified.
That's what you said, though. You've never been the front man. You've never been the actor, you know, the guy that everyone looks at.
No, I'm the guy you don't see. I'm the face you never see.
Yeah,
but I got nobody to hide behind on this one. I mean, it's just, it's really scary.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, if I had my wish, aside from that my kids are already proud, I'd like to have a document. I mean, Evel Knievel is timeless. A Rocket is timeless. If I had my wish, this little film would be a film like Endless Summer or On Any Sunday. I don't know if you're familiar with either
Absolutely.
One of those two films.
Both of them. Both of them.
Yeah, they're classics. They're timeless. I mean, you look at them now, some of them, they're kind of cheesy, but they're really adoringly cheesy, you know? This film's got a Rocket in it. It's got Evel Knievel. I would think that's timeless. And if we did a decent job, maybe this film will even outlast me. That would be my wish, that this is an inspirational thing, that, hey, this is kind of cool movie even now or 20 years from now.
Yeah. Well,
we'll see. We'll find out here soon enough, right?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I think
hey,
I think it's got the makings of a
classic. Either that or get all your listeners' addresses, and we'll send them all a bunch of Christmas gifts of my home movie.
Well, maybe that's one of those things we do. I will I'll definitely take down your number when this thing's getting ready to release on DVD. Maybe we'll do a big social media giveaway on the show or something and send out, you know, a dozen copies to some listeners or something like that.
Well, listen, again, thank you so much for having me. I won't feel bad. I won't take it personally if you edit this whole thing down to like a quick 5 minutes. So you know, but thank you for having me. I mean, I hope our paths cross again soon.
Yeah, me too. I'm out in that direction quite often, so I'll definitely have to look you
Call
up.
Me
next
up.
Yeah, next time I'm in the Hollywood area, I definitely will look you up. It'll be a ton of fun.
Yeah, and good luck with your pie. I hear great things about your show, so I'm going to be tuning in to like listen in.
Well,
except for the one that I'm on, but all the other ones I'll listen into.
Yeah, like me, I can't tell you if my show's good or not because I don't like to hear myself on air. So I record them and then literally we send them out. And, you know, it's one of those things. Even on TV, when I do my TV voiceovers, I don't watch shows. I don't like to hear myself. I'm weird that way. So I can't tell you if I'm good or bad at my job.
Yeah, yeah, kind of like me. I can't tell you if this movie's good or bad, but I am, you know, because I gave it my all.
Well, I appreciate the time, Eddie, man. Take care, and we'll definitely look you up next time I'm in the L.A. area.
Oh, please do, Jim. Please do, and thank you again.
Man, what a show did we have today, loaded with Eddie Braun from Stuntman, also Dave Mason with betonline.ag. Thanks to all our amazing partners here that make this show happen. Once again, it's at JimBeaver15 on all forms of social media. Hit the subscribe button over there on iTunes to both Project Action and the Down and Dirty Radio Show. And make sure and join me and all the other amazing shows on Podcast One. And you know what? If you're excited for Halloween, you're going to love all the thrilling shows Podcast One has to offer. Get ready for chills with some of the best crime and mystery shows around, like Beyond the Darkness, Serial Killer Podcast, Cold Case Files, Murder Made Me Famous, and The First Degree, and so much more. Check out all these thrilling shows today on Podcast One or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And thank you guys for joining me once again. We are going to, check out here because I got to get to Camp Razor and then to the SEMA show and the Off-Road Motorsports Hall of Fame induction ceremony. Hopefully I see you at one of those places. And if I don't, once again, hit me up on social media. And I would love to get your feedback on anything I do. Good, bad, ugly, indifferent. It's all good to me. Thank you, guys. We will see you next week. Be safe. As always, game on.